P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Should be fun. I'm excited.
I'm like, I don't know why I'm nervous right now. It's weird. Our headsets are good. We're...
Mic check. Testing.
Testing. One, what? Two. Oh, boy.
This is like the inside of the cold opening.
This is
like
a true
cold opening. And Kyle, I mean, you're nervous about your face being shown?
Or I'm just, my face is, I look like a tomato.
A tomato.
A tomato.
It's
a Jersey Fresh.
That's good. I'm glad you put on a shirt today.
Boom. It does not, I think it was worn ironically.
I think so, because Cream Magazine is, we'll get into that for sure.
Okay.
I'm a little unhappy you're not wearing pants, but okay. Ready to do this?
Nope.
Well, we're going to do it anyway.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rack!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Cody.
It's fun to have some fun.
Fun!
Tommy.
It's a paper.
Whoever she is, I'm going to find her and I'm going to hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehumanization.
Shut up!
Hello, welcome to this very special live edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
In the flesh, live, and in living color. We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. That is a lie today, though.
We're not going to talk a great movie?
No, we're talking about a very great movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's one of my favorites.
But we're not home, we're actually...
Oh, yeah, we're in Chicago. Chi-Town.
Yes, yes.
Bean-Town.
You have to think about it. Not Bean-Town.
What? It has the bean.
Oh, in the park?
Yeah. No. Oh, that's Boston.
Yeah. No, the thing is in the park here. But they eat beans in Boston, I believe.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
We're coming to you live from Chinatown in an Airbnb. So
yes, so apologies if there's a little bit of laggy internet.
Yeah, but you know
we kind of just got here. So.
Yeah, but this is obviously coming to you live right now. But this episode we are doing, you know, audio recording, and it'll come out our usual Wednesday spot, which is this coming Wednesday.
Whatever. This coming Wednesday, yeah. And you could find us on cageclub.me. Yeah. I'm saying that because I am wearing the Cage Club T-shirt,
and I'm wearing Detroit Sucks, as I said. And again,
which,
it doesn't suck.
No,
it's the home of RoboCop, and you have a statue now, which is cool.
And if you haven't seen Almost Famous, by the way, if you haven't seen Almost Famous, this is a reference.
Yes, this
in
is
Almost
a shirt
Famous.
Worn by Philip Seymour Hoffman, who plays Lester Bangs.
A real shirt that Lester Bangs wears.
Yes.
I mean, wore.
Wore.
Yes. A real shirt that he wore because you can see it in the Google images of him. And we'll talk more about him as well.
Yeah. I just want to get this out of the way. It's my mom's birthday today. Mary Reinfried, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Reinfried. So, wow, this film.
This film is just... I don't know. It's just something magical about it. It really, like, my two... I'm a broken record, no pun intended, because of music and stuff like that, but I always say film is my wife and music is my mistress. Like, nothing would, like, if I could, like, be, like... I mean, not, like, famous, but just make a career out of, like, playing music, that would be, like, a dream come true.
Oh, wow.
No, but I just... I love music, and the music of this... time, this period of this movie.
Great soundtrack, too, on the side.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick trivia for you right here. Usual movie, soundtrack, $1.5 million is budgeted for it. This one, $3.5
million. Wow.
Over 50 songs. Cameron Crowe went to England and showed a cut to Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and they gave him permission. Still didn't give him permission for Stairway.
Denied. Wayne's World.
Bummer.
Reference.
In Chicago. Whoa!
Aurora.
Cicero.
So, yeah, I mean, like you said, great soundtrack, but...
Yeah.
This is a movie that, for guys our age, or people our age, it's like a coming-of-age tale of our generation.
It's
so
good. I mean, what... this came out when we were... actually, like, just a tad, a year or two younger than the lead character of William. He's 15. I think we were, like, 13 years old, but... That's when you first saw it, around that time?
Yeah, it wasn't in the theater.
No, no.
I saw it probably when it first came to pay-per-view or Blockbuster rental. And
this was, I've said it before on the podcast, but this was a another Reinfried family movie night movie. And, yeah.
I mean, when you
didn't
see it as a
kid, anybody.
When you see it as a kid, it's just so awesome. And my biggest fear, and I hadn't seen it, I mean, I'd seen it recently, but at least not in a couple of years. I'm like, oh, I hope it doesn't, like, I hope it holds up, I guess.
Ooh, yeah, it does.
And you know, it really does.
Yeah.
And
it's just brilliant. I'm not afraid to say this, it's a perfect film.
I don't know about perfect.
Okay.
There are very few perfect films for me, sorry for nitpicking, but it's, this sounds corny, but it's a film that really, like, restores my belief in film itself. You know, like,
unfortunately, this film is 17 years old, so.
No, but in terms of, like, this is Cameron Crowe, right?
Yeah.
This is him doing a semi-autobiographical tale.
Yeah, which is awesome. We'll get into that.
Yeah, and it's him just kicking ass and doing a good job at it.
Yeah, I mean.
And this is his magnus opus here. This is his.
Yeah, this is. We've mentioned him before, I feel like, because we were talking about, like, Tom Cruise in some way, or
Breaker, we kind of talked about how Joey Breaker was the kind of worst version of Jerry Maguire.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was, and we did, yeah, so, in that spectrum, I mean, this is a movie, like, a quotable movie, just, like, a really, like, or maybe not quotable, iconic scenes. There's
yeah.
Some really iconic
I
scenes.
I would say that Jerry Maguire is a little bit more quotable.
Yes.
But yeah, that might be one of the most quotable. That might be the most quotable movie of all time.
Yeah.
It's definitely in the top three.
It's up there. Yeah, I'm sorry. I misspoke. I definitely mean much more, like, iconic scenes. And I'm going to say this. Besides the tiny dancer sequence in the bus, I really think some of the most iconic scenes are by our main man, PSH.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, yeah. I mean, he just brings it here. And how many people, Kyle, have we spoken to and they said this was either their favorite role of his or the role that really he broke out for them?
Oh, so many. And it wasn't the first role I saw him in, wasn't the first one I recognized him in, but definitely by the time I saw this, I was like, oh, I know, like, maybe I probably didn't still know him by name at, like, being 13 years old, but I recognized him, and I'm like, ooh, I liked him in Twister. Like, I'm gonna, you know, I'm really, and he's just so engaging. He just, I mean, for a guy that's preaching about, like, uncool and being uncool, man, is he cool in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, it reminds me of the old definition of cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, cool being, he's on the fringes. He marches to the beat of his own drum. Not
yeah.
trying to do a music pun, but
so many music puns this episode.
Probably, yeah. So yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen Almost Famous, very very silly of you. I saw it on Hulu, I think.
I own it on DVD.
I own it on DVD, but you know me. I just don't feel like going back to my DVD collection.
It's on Amazon. I watch it on Amazon.
Was it free on Amazon?
If you have Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. I couldn't find it there.
Oh, really?
I saw it on Hulu. It used to be on Netflix for a while. This is a movie. This is an easily accessible movie. So if you haven't seen Almost Famous, just shame, shame, shame. But if you haven't seen it, Kyle, tell Ooh. Our ignorant audience.
Oh, boy. And we have notes here, so, you know, if you see me looking down. And
I didn't mean to diss you. Sorry, audience.
Almost Famous is the story of William Miller, a very bright 15-year-old that has a deep love for rock and roll, who is given the opportunity to write an article on the mid-level rock group Stillwater. He goes on tour with them, getting an intimate look, making new friendships, and having his eyes open in this rocking coming-of-age story.
Perfect. Great. I like that one.
Almost got lost in my words. But I didn't. And that's what it is. It is, like you said, we were just at that perfect age of, I think anybody, I mean, well, I feel like if you're at that age then, it's probably means a lot to you. And then if you're from that era, it means
from that
a
era.
Lot to you.
But I think if kids watching now would connect to it.
Yeah, there's still just, yeah, there really is. And if you don't admit it, I don't know.
Well, we purposely chose this movie to do our Facebook Live episode mm-hmm. because just we love it so much, and we've heard so many people say such great things about it, so it's just, I'm excited to talk about it.
Iggy Pop, amen.
And that's another thing, too. We use it in our intro. True. We use it in our opening. We use it in our closing.
We've adopted Stan Kool for you Hawk fans, because that's just... I mean, we've known one another since high school. I'm not going to say he was uncool. I know I was uncool. And, like, I mean, this movie just speaks so much to me. It's just...
I mean, I pretty much live my life by Lester's words. You know? Like, it's comforting in a way.
Yeah, I mean, the only true currency in this corrupt world is the moments you share when being uncool with other people. That's modern. That's like James Joyce.
And it's not just us who loves this film. 89% of critics on Rotten Tomatoes like it.
I want 95 at least.
That's really high for Rotten Tomatoes. No, yeah. If you're not Get Out or something like that.
Yeah.
And 92% of audience people like it.
Okay.
I don't know again where that 8% is, but maybe people who got a different translation.
People are out into like disco or something. I actually like disco.
So I know. I was gonna say you defended disco on this podcast previously.
Yeah.
In the Boogie Nights.
It was a cheap
episode.
Shot. I'm sorry. Cheap shot.
Apology accepted.
Yeah.
From me, the disco loving audience, I guess. Let's just get into the. I want to get into really the Lester character.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're gonna great cast here. Great cast,
phenomenal cast.
But what
some
really
breakout roles too?
We're not doing this live episode. We're not discussing all this if it's not for how good Philip Seymour Hoffman is in this film, and how like just awesome the character of Lester is.
Yeah. Little fact about him right away: he shot this because his schedule is really busy. This man acts.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Like, yeah, acts in like you know at least 2-3 movies a year. He was doing a documentary at the time. He was on this for 4 days. All 4 days, had the flu.
Really? And he only shot this for 4 days? I mean, I guess that makes sense. But
he's in about 7 scenes, 3 of which are really quick, like, phone calls. I mean, he's only in, like, technically, you know, you can always be technical about breaking down scenes, but there's, like... Like, right in the beginning, you have him in the radio station, him walking with William, and then them having coffee. And then next times, he's 2, like, phone conversations, and then the major phone conversation of staying uncool. Just when William calls him, you know, because he says, I stay up late.
Yeah, oh, so good. And so he plays Lester Bangs, a real movie critic. Because, I mean, if we have
movie critic.
Yeah, a movie critic, jeez. A real music critic.
Yeah,
and,
he was the editor.
Yeah, he's editor of Cream magazine at the time, but before that, he was a writer for Rolling Stone. He got fired for being too harsh, actually.
Well, what does he say? Be
unmerciful.
Yeah, relentless.
Relentless and unmerciful. Yeah. Oh God, it's so perfect. The real Lester actually died at 33 of a drug overdose.
He was only 33.
Yeah, he only died at 33. Can you believe that?
The video things I saw of that man, he was under the age of 33.
I think he just honestly.
I'm not trying. Not trying to talk ill of the dead. He had some city miles on him.
Yeah. He saw a lot of things. Did a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know.
So I mean, unfortunately, there is a common share in our.
Yeah, unfortunately, there is. They died of a similar, in terms of just mixing drugs.
Yeah.
So, I mean. I think there's, like, levels of this character that Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, relates to. Just his eccentricness is just beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, they're just both brilliant, creative men. And I think probably anyone that's in, you know, in the arts. I mean, everyone has opinions about something, but they're both, I think in the end of the day, the closest word to attach them both to is passionate.
Oh, yeah.
And like, so, yeah, I mean... It's just that's what I think he really drew from it, and it's really cool that he's playing a character that there was, you know, plenty of stuff to, you know, draw from.
Material stuff.
Videos and articles.
So we mentioned Cameron Crowe directed.
Yeah, this man has directed some amazing films.
Yeah, We Bought a Zoo, Elizabethtown.
I have a soft spot for We Bought a Zoo.
I mean, I like animals.
It's got Thomas Hayden Church. Thomas Hayden Church just...
True. I am a big Thomas
Hayden Church. Except for Spider-Man 3, Thomas Hayden Church is always in fantastic movies.
George of the Jungle.
Yeah.
Classic. But, I mean, what the classic, as we mentioned, Jerry Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Say Anything is a big film of his.
Vanilla Sky.
Vanilla, of course, Vanilla Sky. And he wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And which is funny because it's somewhat related to the autobiographical nature of this film.
Yeah. So wait. No, go continue.
No, I know you had some notes about that. You were telling me before in terms of...
Yeah, so he was a young Rolling Stone reporter. And like he toured with the Allman Brothers. Greg Allman is the one that he said he didn't trust him, and he was, you know, he was the enemy.
Yeah, when you say young, he was like really young. That whole thing in this film. So in this film, William's character goes into school, like what is he, 3 years younger than the rest of the kids, something like that. And that actually happened to Cameron Crowe. So he was able to graduate. He missed his graduation, like William's character does in this film. And he was able to just take the job full-time with Rolling Stone and write when he was, like, 16, 17, I think.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine? And I mentioned Fast Times at Ridgemont High because he did the whole Rolling Stone thing for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was able to... He looked so young that he was able to undercover, go back to high school, and just go for fun. And he, like, knew all, like, the ropes, and then it was,
he pulled the... What's the Drew Barrymore movie? Back or no? What's that? She goes back to high school as a reporter.
I don't remember. I know what you're talking about. That was like Drew Barrymore's prime, right there.
Yeah.
You could hear us on Drew Barrymore podcast. I wish I had a better podcast.
More Barrymore.
But yeah, so he wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont High like undercover.
Okay.
So I'm saying like that's related here. It's astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, again, so. Allman Brothers, Greg Allman didn't trust him. They're in a he was in a near almost like a near fatal plane crash with the Who.
Crazy.
Russell Hammond is based on Glenn Frey of the Eagles.
Oh, he's
listening
to Glenn Frey, really?
Yeah. I didn't know that. Is it Frey or Fry?
Fry.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Fry.
Chicago reference. How many Kevin?
Just keep throwing them out there.
Bueller. That's another one.
It's the same movie,
but it's fun. It's okay, fun to whatever. Say. It's for the kids.
Now we're only John Hughes
for
films.
The kids. Polka, polka, polka.
All right. Back on the rails, Kyle. All
right.
This is the stuff you guys don't hear.
Yeah,
this is the stuff that gets edited out.
I have to edit it myself out. It's the most lonely.
It's
just
a
like
cathartic process, really, right?
It's
be
yeah,
like, wow, Kyle, cheap, I shouldn't have been like that, Kyle.
Cheaper than therapy. yeah, I mean this cast we mentioned that.
Yeah, definitely.
Russell Hammond is played by Billy Crudup, so he's the lead guitarist for the fictional band Stillwater.
Couple words on him. Like, I think very underrated actor.
Yeah, I mean he's a guy that
he's not a household name.
No, not a household name. Like last thing I saw him in was Alien Covenant, which wasn't good.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, very. It bummed me out, just like Prometheus wasn't. Didn't you know? Alien is such a masterpiece, but he's someone that I'm like, oh yeah, Billy Crudup's in it. But then the movie doesn't end up being that great. But I mean, he's two other like big ones that I think we like both of them is Big Fish.
Big Fish, yeah.
And The Watchmen.
Watchmen.
He plays Dr. Manhattan, and he's just perfect.
Yeah. We liked him in Big Fish too.
Yeah, and then he's going to reteam with our main man Philip Seymour Hoffman in Mission Impossible 3.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah. Then after him, so William Miller is Patrick Fugit. Is that how you want to?
Fugit. I don't know. He hasn't really done too much since then.
He reteamed with Cameron Crowe in We Bought a Zoo. He's also in
Gone Girl. He's like one of the cops.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the star here. This is his first film.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, good for him. And
we read on Wikipedia he likes to surf, so.
Very true.
Catch the big wave, brother.
Now, the next person you're going to mention, probably, I'm assuming, Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson.
As
breakout
Penny Lane,
role.
Immortal Penny Lane.
So many young actresses.
Arguably still her best role.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think. I mean, she's done some good romantic comedies.
How Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Yeah, I know you're a sucker for romantic comedies. Her in that yellow dress, iconic romantic comedy movement.
Yeah, but daughter of Goldie Hawn, if you don't know who she is, and... Wow, she won a Golden Globe for Best Actress.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she was nominated for Best Actress.
At the Oscars?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the only Oscar this won was Best Screenplay, Original Screenplay.
It's a great screenplay, so.
Yeah.
Just from a writing perspective.
Yeah, and Kate Hudson, I mean, this is a breakout role for her, and she's definitely a scene stealer.
Like not in a negative way. From her delivery and her look, like, this is her being the perfect, you know? Yeah. Like, I don't like to use these words, but she's awesome as Penny Lane.
Mm-hmm. And then we have, this is another actress, I think I've said it before, what actresses have I said that? Like, you know, it takes, like, you going back to the movie and recognizing, what's her name from Titanic, that Molly, Kate?
What's her name? Kathy Bates?
Kathy Bates.
Yes.
Kate Bates.
Kate. You know her a little bit more personally, so you have the right to call her Kate Bates.
But yeah, Kathy Bates, and I've said it before for other actresses, but Frances McDormand plays Elaine Miller, William's mother in this movie, and she's
so
just
good.
She is a national treasure when it comes to, like, female actors in general, but female actors.
Look, my mother's nothing like her.
Yeah.
But she feels like my mom. She feels like your mom. She feels like everyone's mom, you know?
This is a strong female character, by the way.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. She's a little crazy, like celebrating Christmas in, what was it?
September, because of commercialism. And then, but I love that moment that she tells her, because she's a college professor.
Yeah.
And she says, like, rock and roll stars have kidnapped my son. Some of the comedic time in this movie by, like, not traditionally, like, Billy Crudup isn't a comedic actor, but, like, he has moments, even William and Kate Hudson, and, I mean, and the next character, or actor, Jason Lee, plays
Jeff Beebe. Originally from the Jeff Beebe Band.
Yeah.
He is so good as just this, like, arrogant...
Yeah.
He's, like, full of himself, lead singer of the band.
He's just so good.
The dynamic...
Not his real singing voice.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. The dynamic between Russell and Jeff Beebe.
It's just, like, that perfect, like, feuding... I'll even call it feuding brothers versus feuding friends.
Well, they even say it. It's like Jimmy Page, Robert Plant.
Yeah.
You know, we see this so many times in bands, and it just...
Well, yeah, and a really cool thing about the four... Because I don't have the other two guys written down, because they don't really have much of acting careers. But one guy was actually... The bassist was a musician from a real, like, a smaller band.
That's cool. We'll have to check that out.
But the four actors of the band practiced 4 hours a night, 5 nights for 6 weeks.
Wow.
That's awesome.
But it's also, like...
Peter Frampton was a big part of this.
Yeah, Peter Frampton did, like, the soundtrack, and mm-hmm. he did a lot of the Fever Dog song. I mean, a lot of the Stillwater songs, like Fever Dog.
Yeah, and he has a cameo. It's kind of like a ha-ha.
Fever Dog! That song stays in my head.
Yeah.
Which is their lead song in the film.
But,
scratching out my back door. Fever Dog!
But Peter Frampton plays the road manager for Humble Pie, which Peter Frampton was part of Humble Pie, so that's kind of cool.
Makes sense. That's funny. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. So it's just, and so Peter Frampton also, he gave Billy Crudup some guitar lessons.
Oh,
so
cool,
that's
cool, cool.
Kind of awesome. Yeah. Personal. You get to, that's like the, like, not that acting is easy by any means, or just, like, you know, isn't hard, you know, work. You got to put so much into it, clearly, just from them. But it is kind of cool that as actors, they have, like, one talent, this of acting, and they're working on that. But at the same time, in, like, certain movies, you get to then go ahead and practice. Like, you know, they are being compensated, so they're getting paid to play and form a band. And he gets personal lessons from Peter Frampton.
Oh, God.
Come on.
Peter fucking Frampton.
Another Chicago
High
Fidelity.
Is that Peter fucking Frampton? High Fidelity, one of my favorites.
One of my favorites
as well. I wish
Philson
Hoffman was in it.
We walked by the neighborhood today. Oh, ooh. Another. Okay. One is going to be obvious. Two people were up for the role of Lester Bangs. That would be an edit.
Okay, who did Philip Seymour Hoffman beat out?
Yeah, two guys.
Jack Black?
Yes, that is one.
Wow,
so that's
really?
Yeah.
It's so amazing how we're finding this, like, parallel,
it's
Jack
so
Black,
weird,
Philip Seymour Hoffman,
yeah.
And they, like, it's different directions that they end up going into. Philip Seymour Hoffman,
Philip Seymour Hoffman is the bane of Jack Black's existence. Of his acting existence.
Okay, so who's the other guy?
No guesses?
I don't...
It's someone we loved and we referenced earlier today.
I have no idea. Just tell me.
Jon Favreau. That would have been a cool choice.
Interesting, yeah.
We love Jon Favreau as a director and actor.
Would either of them have been anything close to what Philip Seymour Hoffman does here?
this is just, again, this is a role that over time, at the time and over time, people just come to love and always quote him for it, and is just, you know, it's a masterful role. And
absolutely. Who else is in this? Zooey Deschanel. That's a really early role for her.
That's pretty cool.
I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like Zooey Deschanel got cast in this film and she kept her entire wardrobe for the rest of her life. Right? Because, like, it's a period piece. It takes place in the 70s.
Yeah.
And she's in, like, this, like, great 70s gear. Like, this great, even when she's a flight attendant later.
Yeah, she's,
and I feel like she still wears that.
Sarah Jessica Parker, that was part of her deal for Sex and the City, I remember.
Oh, but she ended up being close.
It's a very lucrative part of her deal. So, yeah, every outfit she ever wore in Sex and the City. Why I know this? I don't know.
I don't know, but, like, it's
but
great.
But it's fun for you.
I mean, and she's... I like her as this sister character. Mm-hmm. Trying to think about... Oh, you know what's weird about this film? And I definitely know you caught this, Kyle. How about all these weird little, like, cameos? Not even cameos, because they're just little roles of people who...
ended up having fruitful careers.
Yes.
Let's start naming them. Rainn Wilson.
Oh, Rainn Wilson, yeah, he's...
Yeah, Dwight from The Office.
He's, like, a background guy at Rolling Stone.
Yeah, works at Rolling Stone.
He may have, like,
he has,
what
are those things called? The, like, the metal thing that the cigarettes at the end of?
I have no idea what they're called. Yeah, I was just going to say the Corral Deville holder.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's there with Ben Fong Torres.
Yeah. Nick Schwartzen.
Nick Schwartzen, he's, like, a David Bowie fan.
Yeah.
He's like, Bowie! What's his name?
Jay Baruchel.
He's like a kid. He's like a...
He's so innocent.
Yeah.
Like, you think, like, I don't know how old Patrick Fugit was at that, the age he was when acting in this movie, but he, you know, is young in this, but watching this now, I'm like, wow, what a baby face. Like, I feel so old watching and being like, oh, I thought he looked older. He was older than me at the time. But then you see, like, Jay Baruchel, who's still, like, in a lot of stuff, and you're like, wow, these guys, like, were just children. And, she has a much more, it's not a big performance, but Anna Paquin.
Oh, Anna Paquin, yeah. No, that's an Oscar winner right there. I think even before this. I forgot what she won for, but she won when she was really young.
Squid and the Whale.
Squid and the Whale?
Right?
I don't know. I'm going to look that up while we continue.
Is it Noah Baumbach film, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just know, but she has an Oscar.
And then Jimmy Fallon is in this.
Yeah, Jimmy Fallon. How weird is
that? He must have been, like, his first year in SNL, and he just plays this awesome character of Dennis Hopey becomes the new
manager. She won Best Actress in The Piano in 1994. Best Actress Supporting. Sorry, Best Supporting Actress.
Okay. Nothing else?
No.
She never won Best Actress, just Best Supporting? Okay.
Just Best Supporting.
No.
She won a Satellite Award for True Blood, if you're counting that.
Oh, Satellite Awards. I love Satellite Awards. Classic. I love
Anna Paquin. Or how about, what's her name? The girl, again.
I have no idea.
From The Waterboy and The Craft.
Yeah.
She has a weird name, like Faruka something.
Faruza Balk?
I like her. I should learn her name.
Oh, she's awesome in this
movie.
Yeah,
I should learn her name.
Yeah, Faruza.
Who else did we miss here? I guess that's, like, all these little... Oh, did you mention the guy from Modern Family?
Oh, nope. And Cam from Modern Family.
Yeah, Cam.
Sorry, I don't know your name. But
he
even has, like, a funny line that he's just like...
He just plays a receptionist at a hotel,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, in, like, New Mexico or something, or Arizona. And he's like, phone call for William. And he's like, your mom freaked me out.
Eric Stone Street, that's his name. Sorry, I wanted to get that right.
Boom. Eric Stone Street. Sorry, I'll remember
crazy.
From now on.
This has nothing really to do... Like, most of these people are not pivotal characters, but it was just fun seeing them. I always say, like, that's a good casting director.
Yeah. And now I'm done with my trivia. I'm going to open this back up to just remember actors' names.
So that, yeah, I'm not sure that was the best idea, Kyle, but
nope.
Okay.
I'm just trying to be very candid with you people. I don't want to lie.
So let's build to our first Hoffman scene, because it's pretty soon in the film. Like, it's pretty...
Yeah, I wrote it. 12 minutes, 37 seconds.
So we...
Yeah.
So... Basically, this film starts out, and we see a young William.
Yeah. I just even love the simplicity of it starting out, and there's, like, a needle drop, and then there's just... It's just, like, the two important things. There's the music and then the writing, which he pulled a... James Cameron is famous for drawing the picture of Rose in Titanic, and that's his hand drawing. This is Cameron Crowe writing.
Two Camerons here, kind of. Did James Cameron draw that himself?
That's his hand, and he's drawing it, yeah.
Okay, I get it's his hand.
Yeah.
But he literally drew it.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of creepy.
No, it's He's a very talented drawer.
Yeah, I mean, props for that.
But, yeah, so besides, like, this, like, you know, the title sequence, we right away we meet Anita, Elaine, and William. So that's, you know, the mom, brother, sister. And, you know, Elaine is a strict mom. Anita is a free spirit. And William is just, like, he learns, as we said, learns that he's 11 versus he thinks he's 13.
13, I think. I don't know.
And he has a great freak out.
Yeah, that's a good, that kid's good.
Yeah, he's been in future things.
Yeah, I think so.
And then you know, just really great storytelling. Like, we just see him in the bathroom, and he's just standing next to kids with, like, mustaches.
Yeah.
And, like,
and the pivotal moment is when Zooey Deschanel's character Anita.
Yeah.
She leaves home with her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. She eventually becomes a flight attendant, and she leaves William her vinyls.
Yeah.
Her vinyl records.
And vinyls are back, by the way, baby. Like, I've
that they are both another high fidelity.
Yeah. Thing, but she leaves him like a little note, and she was like, and there's on the album Tommy by The Who, and it says, like, light a candle, and it'll, yeah, you know, like, expand. And at that moment, I'm just
she
like,
she also goes, like, remember, she leaves, she goes, one day you will be cool.
Yeah. And oh, that's so great, because the cool is just, like, a big part of this. Just,
yeah,
like, selling out, or, you know, being cool, being uncool. And I just, but right when, like, he puts on Tommy and, like, The Who, and I mean, I really like The Who. They're not my favorite band by any means, but I was just like fucking A. Like, it's just like,
oh.
I mean, this is what, like,
I was going to say, don't you wish you had a sister, but you have a sister. I meant to say, like, don't you wish you had that moment in your life, though, like, where,
yeah,
someone,
I mean,
just gifted you.
I mean, well, I'm very lucky that, like, both my parents, particularly my dad, has, like, excellent taste in music, and then between him and actually, you were the one that got me into my favorite band of all time, Queen. Knew the stuff, but
you're welcome.
Yeah,
and that was only last week. No, that was a long time.
A long time ago, before the Empire, and but I was just like, this is exactly like what music is. Meaning, like, you can just put on an album, and no matter what mood you're in and what mood then you want to be in, like, that's how powerful it is. And
I thought about something similar too. You're more of a music guy than me, like,
okay.
I'm just married to film. I don't cheat on film, but
no,
music,
yeah,
is not my mistress.
Yeah.
I'm a committed guy, but and occasionally I, like, won't listen to music for a while.
Okay.
But every time I go back to music, I'm like, what was I doing? You know, like, it's music has a way of, like, cleansing you,
yeah,
you know? And
well, again, it's just, like, whether you're, I mean, I don't know anyone that wants to go from happy to sad, but, like, if you're sad and you want to stay that way and you just want to be, like, just feel that, like, embrace of knowing other people are sad too, you've got that. Or if you are sad and you want to be happy, or you're just happy and you want to keep being happy.
Yeah,
or,
it's not that you want to go from happy to sad. It's that you want people to understand your sadness.
Yeah.
And it's these, like, musicians, like, they connect with
and
you.
And it really is that the actress, she plays the character Sapphire, but the Feruza Balk, or however you pronounce her name.
Sapphire.
She said, like, her last time we see her, she talks to Billy Crudup's character, Russell, and she just says, like, man, like, you know, she's talking about the new, well, she refers to them as, like, groupies or whatever, but, you know, famously, I think the term came, you know, into most people's households of Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what, like, these women that tour with the band, they're about the music, it's not, you know, about sex and drugs.
Yeah, supposedly.
Supposedly.
You touched on a point, I think we both touched on this point, kind of. It's Kate Hudson's character, right? Penny, who mentions...
Yeah, Penny Lane,
almost, she
Beatles
is a,
reference.
She is a more intimate thing that we kind of just said with music. Whereas she... What does she say? Something about, like, if ever I'm lonely, I go to the record store and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I could just hear my friends. She literally knows them, so it's, like, a little bit different. But I think we all can connect in that kind of level.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a record we like, and it feels like they know us.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, music has that power that also, if you listen to it at a, you know, a certain point in your life, it'll take you back to that time. It's just really, I mean, I love music, and this movie, again, has some of my favorite, like, that era. It's just so good.
For sure. So,
not, yeah.
William, right, he's a bright guy. He gets really into music. And I guess it seems like Lester, mm-hmm, is, like, one of his heroes or something, because he comes to San Diego, his town, which is also his hometown. And That's our first time we see Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, so, you know what? I mean, hopefully you guys, we did a little test the other day, and we could hear it pretty well, so hopefully you can hear it. We're going to be watching the scene right now, and again, when we release the episode, I'm going to put in a much clearer version of the audio, but we're going to watch the first scene of him right now. We're going to hear the opening of our show.
Can't wait.
Music. Yeah, true music. Not just rock and roll. It chooses you. You know, it lives in your car or alone, listening to your headphones with a vast scenic bridges and angelic choirs in your brain. You know, it's a place apart from the vast, benign lap of America. Did you know that the letter by the Box Tops was a minute and 58 seconds long? It means nothing, nil. But it takes them less than 2 minutes to accomplish what Jethro Tull takes hours to not accomplish. You see, this is fatuous, pseudo blubber. You know, I mean, which is fine, but voiced it off as art, you know, or the Doors, or Jim Morrison. He's a drunken buffoon posing as a poet.
I like the Doors.
Give me the Guess Who. Come on, they got the courage to be drunken buffoons, which makes them poetic.
It's quite an honor to have the world's greatest rock critic and editor of Cream Magazine back home in San Diego for a few days, Lester Bangs.
Live American Woman. Have you ever, the most brilliant piece of gobbledygook ever? Give me some white light, white heat. Iggy Pop! Amen! I just put this on. This isn't on your playlist,
Lester,
either.
Don't you think it's a little bit early for that?
Not for me.
Okay, well, that was Lester Bangs. This is Alice Wisdom, and here's Iggy Pop.
People, like that, like, what an introduction to a character.
I don't even know, like, what to say about it. Like, I'm just happy. Like, I'm happy that I live in a world where that exists.
Yeah, I mean, I love that he calls Jim Morrison a drunken buffoon. I'm very curious as to, you know, so number one, plenty of stuff on the real Lester Bangs. Number two, Cameron Crowe already had like an intimate relationship with music and journalism of that time. I'm very curious, and I'm not leading to like I read it somewhere or anything, just how much like is almost like based off of direct quotes or just like having a feeling like that guy would have said that. Like I'm just like, just since he's playing a true guy, I feel like there's got to be a little something.
Well, I've
that
read
he...
some of his writing, and it's so similar to what they're saying.
Yeah, I'm just very curious if he, like, if, like, the Jim Morrison, I'm not saying it's verbatim, but if at one point he just, like, wrote down, like, Jim Morrison's a drunken buffoon or something.
I wouldn't
or, like, sure. Obviously, like, maybe he had, like, did you ever see a picture of him in a Guess Who shirt? Or just, you know, like, if you wrote, like, things about them. I'm just very, you know.
It seems, like, pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I can't say 100% authenticity that whatever everything he says is what that guy said, Lester. But...
But Philip Seymour Hoffman, I mean, he sells it. Like, if you watch, we'll post some like videos.
This guy's
of the real
Lester Bangs. Think about what this guy's saying too. He's like a hipster god.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole thing, like you said, Jim Morrison. He thinks he's a poet, but the Guess Who, the courage to be drunken buffoons, and that makes them poetic.
I mean, just the and then we get like there's that voice of his, that classic Philip Seymour Hoffman voice, and then I imitated the hand gestures. Like, he's just he's all over the place, but, like, all right there at the same time, if that makes sense.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he just, it's just, I love him perusing the albums, just, like, the woman DJ, like, trying to keep him, like, a little, like, holding onto the chain. It's just like, you can't do that.
Because he's in the studio, and he's just, acting-wise, he's using so much of his body into this character, like, just how he picks up the record, and just, like...
And I'll say this, Philip Seymour Hoffman pulls the stash off.
Yeah.
I think he had a stash in, Money for Nothing with John Cusack.
I think so, yeah.
But pulls the stash off. Looks good.
He could be a stash man, you know.
He could be a stash man.
So then, you know, William kind of meets with him.
Yeah. I'm...
Right? And, like, this is what sets William off on his quest, if you will, right?
Yeah, I mean, first there's just, you know, them talking on the street. And he's just like, I can't be standing here all day talking to my fans.
Yeah, and then like he...
Yeah, so that's just like a brief
scene. Keeps
talking
to him.
But then he cuts to this their diner or whatever, he's having a cup of coffee. I mean, might as well play this one too.
Okay,
right?
Cool. I wish we could play all of them, but...
You know, because once you go to LA, you're gonna have friends like crazy, but they're gonna be fake friends. You know, they're gonna try to corrupt you. You know, and you got an honest face, and they're gonna tell you everything. But you cannot make friends with the rock stars.
Okay, fine.
If you're gonna be a true journalist, you know, a rock journalist, first you never get paid much. But you will get free records from the record company. There's fucking nothing about you that is controversial, man. God, it's gonna get ugly, man. They're gonna buy you drinks. You're gonna meet girls. They're gonna try to fly you places for free, offer you drugs. And I know it sounds great, but these people are not your friends. You know, these are people who want you to write sanctimonious stories about the genius of rock stars, and they will ruin rock and roll and strangle everything we love about it. You know, because they're trying to buy respectability for a form that is gloriously and righteously dumb. You know, and you're smart enough to know that. And the day it ceases to be dumb is the day it ceases to be real. Right? And then it just becomes an industry of cool. I mean, I'm telling you, you're coming along at a very dangerous time for rock and roll. I mean, the war is over. They won. You know, 99% of what passes for rock and roll these days, silence is more compelling. You know, that's why I think you should just turn around, go back, you know, and be a lawyer or something. I can tell from your face that you won't. I can give you $35. Give me 1,000 words on Black Sabbath.
An assignment?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. You have to make your reputation on being honest and, you know, unmerciful.
Honest, unmerciful.
Yeah, if you get into a jam, you can call me. I stay up late.
Honest and unmerciful. Like, and doesn't that become the whole, like, credo?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, well, that's what, I mean, William definitely is someone who has, like, he's truthful and his integrity. Like, you know, like, even the people, that talk to his mom on the phone have nothing but nice things to say about him.
His flaws as a person, and maybe even as a character, I think come down to his youth.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm someone that I've, like fall in love almost, like, way too fast. That's definitely, like, a problem. But that comes with youth. I haven't learned from it yet. And, but, like, that's definitely, that plays into a big part, like, his, you know, how much he's into Penny Lane, how much he ends up loving her.
Yeah, and, like, the stuff he's, like, loving her, you know, yeah. Love. And it's like, come on, you know. But sex disguises love, love disguises sex.
Oh. But, I mean, just the fact...
Quote later in the film, I'm not just...
Yes. You know. But I love Philip Seymour Hoffman, I love the character of Lester, an industry of cool. Like, I can't pinpoint it, I'm not into really much music that...
Much music, like the old... channel, like the old Canadian music channel, Much Music.
I don't even know. See, that's how much I'm not into it from, like, that time. But, yeah, I mean, it's just... There's not much music I'm into, and it definitely... You can't deny that it's... That today's music is much more about, like, an image as well. I mean, it started coming. My favorite band of all time is Queen. They're glam rock. They're, you know, the showmanship of them is impeccable. But that was just still, like, very incorporated into the music. But it did start in the 80s. You got the hair metal, and then boy bands came back in the 90s. And it is kind of getting back. Like, the rock music is getting back to, I think, some basic roots. But I just...
That's
I just
not what Lester says to...
No. Well, he said, yeah, rock and roll's dead. And, I mean, just in his face when he's like, call me, you know, I stay up late. It's perfect.
It really is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now we're off on this journey, right? Because he gives him the assignment.
Yeah, he gives 1,000 words on
Black Sabbath.
But he can't get in.
So he goes to the local arena, and he can't get in, and what happens? He meets...
he ends up meeting Penny Lane.
Penny Lane.
Who tries to get him in, but she can't even get him in with her all her strings with the security guards and all that kind of stuff. So, but then the infamous bus, what was the bus's name? I wrote it down at some point.
Oh, God. Oh, I wrote it down. I wrote it down.
But, yeah, they arrive in their tour bus, Stillwater's tour bus, and they show up. And right away, they're, like, cold to him, but he compliments them. Does everything pretty much that Lester says don't do. Like, that's the funny thing. Lester totally, in that scene that we just played, says everything that's going to happen in this movie. He, like, describes exactly what, like, he's going to do. Without with the exception of, like, falling in love
with,
like, a girl.
He's like a Greek chorus that actually talks.
I love that, a Greek chorus.
That actually talks to them, you know.
Yeah, and I love the whole, that's where we learn about groupies and Band-Aids. And again, they're just being, the band Stillwater's just being, like, totally abrasive to him. And then he says that he wants to interview him and gives him, throws him the compliments. And they're like, oh, well, why don't you come in? I just love this whole world. And at the end of that concert, he's saying goodbye to, like, everybody and knows everyone by their names already. Like, even, like, that character, Red Dog.
Yeah.
Hello, brother!
Doris is the
Doris
name of the
bus. Doris is the name of the bus.
Doris is the heart and soul of this band.
Yeah. And the title of the movie comes from the bus, I guess, or the title of the movie.
The thing is,
the
you know what's weird about this? Sometimes it says that on the top, Almost Famous Tour, and sometimes it just says Stillwater Tour. I was, like, looking for that to see, and I'm like, oh, that's a little weird. It's almost like they...
But it's classic at the end of the movie, No More Planes Tour.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're more of the Jeff Beebe here? Or are you more of the, what's his name?
Of, what, Russell?
Russell.
I think I'm more like the bassist. It's just like, yeah, man.
But there's only
just,
two of
like,
us. One of us
I'm
has
hungry.
To be Jeff Beebe.
Oh, okay, that's what
and
we're
And one
doing.
Of us has to be Russell Hammond. And I want to know, your personal thoughts on this.
I think you think I'm Jeff.
No, I wanted you to say that, but no, you're more Russell because you do more of the production angle.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm just like the lazy front man.
You get them off. I find that one guy that's not getting him off. This is going to get misquotes.
So what's great about this movie, you know, they go... He becomes, like, part of this family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they start to go on this tour because Rolling Stone calls them.
Yeah, so they read a couple of his articles. Not the one they did for Cream magazine, but they said, like, a couple things he writes for San Diego papers and magazines. And they loved his stuff. And they also think that he's, like, older.
Yeah, like the mom picks up the phone.
Yeah, he's like,
I know how I get when I don't get do something for my lady or something like that.
Ben Functor. But... Yeah, I think it's also important to, like, note that this is a strong, like, you know, they build this, like, core family unit. And, you know, of course we're talking about him the most because it's a podcast of Philip Seymour Hoffman. But it's awesome that, his scenes were, well, with the female DJ for a second, and then William, and then a conversation with William, but it's just him in a room. And that's...
Oh, God, it's so good how he can just, like... Yeah. Act alone in those scenes. We've seen him on the phone how many times? Like, in films?
Yeah.
Like, at least 5 times now. Or I know it seems like such minutia.
I love that you called it a Greek chorus. That actually really, like, I like that a lot. He is, like, the Greek chorus in a way.
Not traditionally, because, like...
No, I know.
We hear him, but yes. Like, but he's been like this similarly in films. Not as powerful, but I think Next Stop Wonderland, he wasn't so much... The advice guy?
No, but he was also... He really pushed...
Yeah, he pushed the plot forward.
The plot forward.
Yes, yes. And...
This is not him necessarily... I guess technically he is the initial incident because he gives William the opportunity to go write the Black Sabbath article and then he meets Stillwater.
Mm-hmm.
So he has, like, that kind of element to him. But after that, he's just... He almost becomes, like, a paternal figure. Well, that's the whole thing. William, so there's... You know, his sister has left. She hasn't lived at home for, I think, at least, like, 3 or 4 years at that point. And then he's still with his mom. He's 15 years old, but he's going to be graduating high school. And so his father died of a heart attack. And then, as again, his sister has left. So it's I feel like Philip Seymour Hoffman almost, you could say older brother, but I want to give that more to Russell. Like this adoptive older brother.
Yeah.
And then,
because he looks up to Russell.
Yeah. But then, looks up to Russell, yeah, in that brother way. But then as far as like a job and just like this guy is like what he wants to do is like, you know, his dream work, like Lester Bangs, and you know, that being Philip Seymour Hoffman. So that's just a really, I think that's just like a fun kind of, you know, like it because then the rest of the film is about like a makeshift family, like what the life on the road is.
Yeah. And you mentioned, like, for example, a tiny dancer scene. I get a little uncomfortable when people sing in harmony on buses, but I know a lot of people like that, so.
I always, after seeing this movie, every time I was, like, on a bus, I remember in high school, I was trying to get people to start singing Bohemian Rhapsody, and it's just, I don't know, nothing makes me happier than, like, a big old sing-along, and that's.
That's where me and you differ. Again, like, I don't know, maybe it's the evil in me. When people are singing, and
you're a nihilist,
possibly, and you know how when there's like that warm environment in the air, like yeah. everyone's just getting along and it's happy.
You just want to ruin it.
I don't necessarily want to ruin it, but I want to leave it.
I embrace it.
I know you embrace it, and that's where we're different.
Yeah,
I'm the evil. You are the angel.
It's getting weird.
A little bit, but I mean, so. This whole road process is great because it's about comfort, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their family, not really, though. He's like the outsider, William, and he's trying to get his story.
He's trying to get a story, but the biggest thing is he does interview. We don't see him interview the bassist and the drummer, but you know he's always talking. Well, and Jeff loves to talk.
Yeah.
And Jason Lee is just playing it to a T.
Oh, God.
He's just nails this role. I'm surprised that like some other people weren't nominated for like other you know like their acting in this film, but it is just it's you know fantastic.
Is this the greatest
between this and the Chipmunks movies?
I was gonna say Chipmunks. You know, that's his biggest franchise. That's a huge franchise.
First song in this movie is the Chipmunks Christmas
song.
Oh yeah!
Song. Wow. Yeah. Continuity there.
But yeah, so he's constantly talking to Jeff, but he's trying to get Russell, and Russell just keeps delaying whether he's with Penny and. Or he just doesn't want to give
but
it.
But William's
that point.
Picking up these little things throughout the movies.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie. These little, like one line I love is Russell's in the room. And so, just to be clear, he meets Penny, falls in love with Penny, but Penny, I love how he thinks he's introducing Penny to Russell, but like obviously they have history. And Penny ends up, contrary to what she said about the groupie thing, you know, she ends up like sleeping with Russell and. A lot.
As Jay Baruchel says, the great Penny Lane.
And there's that one scene where I guess she's in the bedroom with him in one of the hotels, and William knocks on the door. He's like, go away, hey. Russell. I'm in too truthful a mood. You know? And it's these guys, they know they're going to be on Rolling Stone. They don't know they're going to be on the cover yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to sell a certain... image that's not really them. And the more interesting story is exactly what Lester says, the honest, open, unmerciful story of what it is like to be a mid-level band.
Well, yeah, Russell says towards the end because they end up denying everything when William finishes writing the article and hands it over to the continuity. That woman was kind of from the get-go. They were very surprised how young he is. So I guess rightfully so.
I wrote that down like, wow, this lady's mean. And then I'm like,
you know what? Yeah, she probably works really hard and like women in the workforce not given a fair like, opportunity at that point or something. But it's just, he hands it in and they say that none of it's true. And he's like, did you talk to Russell? And he's like, yeah, that's exactly who I was talking to, Russell. And then they're, him and Jeff are having a conversation, Russell and Jeff. And they, like, Russell just says to him, which is very important. He's like, well, maybe we are exactly the way he wrote us. Maybe we are those people. You know, because Jeff is like, I sound like a douche. So...
It's great, you know. It's so humanizing.
Mm-hmm.
What are your favorite moments? I guess on these like road things when he's so. I mean, I guess the gag here, right, is a couple things. His mom keeps calling him because she wants him to come home. She wants him to come, like not miss a test.
Yeah.
And then it becomes like not miss
graduation, which he does.
And then it becomes like the whole. I mean, on the same token, it's the whole extending. He's only supposed to be there a week, and then 2 weeks, and then he ends up being, it's like a summer or something, at least a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I feel like he's gone on tour with them for like a month. But, I mean, they're paying, Rolling Stone's paying for it, so.
So it's basically life on the road. What are some of your favorite moments on the road here?
Well, I love when Russell, like, and so awkward when they get into, over the t-shirts, they get into a fight.
Oh, God, the t-shirt, right? Yeah. And it's just like Russell.
Russell is clear and everyone else is in the background. Yeah.
And Jeff is so pissed, Jason Lee's character.
Oh, I'm one of the out-of-focus guys.
Yes.
But that whole moment of Russell and William going, and they're walking around, and the one kid pulls up, he's like, yeah, you just want to... you know, party with some chill, like, locals or whatever, and that's another, like, obviously, like, a famous line, but famous scene from the movie, like, I'm a golden god, but I just love, it's not even, like, it doesn't get to that part is my favorite. I love Billy Crudup, and it really is, it's a testament to his acting, when he's just walking in there, and that sincerity, before he's on acid, like, his whole sincerity of, like, I had this lamp, I'm on drugs,
you know.
Which supposedly Robert Plant said, I'm the golden god.
Oh, did he? Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. Part of that I like, though, is you see also his phoniness there. Like you said, he's vulnerable, but he's like...
Oh, he's very, like, manipulative to William.
Yes, and especially...
He knows, like, exactly.
Let me go with the real people, you know? Yeah. It's kind of like an act. And then what does he end up looking like? He looks like an asshole in the end. Not an asshole in a jerk way, but he's on top of the roof. He says, I'm a golden god, but what's the other thing? He says, like, I dig music.
Yeah.
You know? He's not profound.
You don't want those to be your last words.
Oh, God, it's so good.
And then I love... It's kind of, I think it's like right after this scene, and when William's talking to Penny Lane, he's like, I have to go home, and she's like, you are home. It's just like a great... Everyone's just so good, because we're saying from, you know, Jason Lee and Billy Crudup and Kate Hudson, obviously Philip Seymour Hoffman. Everyone just, they're given a job, and they did it to, like, the best possible capacity.
Absolutely. So another scene I like when they're on tour, I don't know if I like this, but I had an interesting fact about it, when he gets, like, de-virginized.
Yeah.
So William's a virgin, and all the other groupies, not Penny Lane.
No.
She
was peeing in front of him.
I guess they just, you know, they sleep with him and whatever, and, like, you know, he's kind of awkward. That actually happened to Cameron Crowe.
Oh! Wow!
The de-virginization by Band-Aids.
That's,
and to me,
not
that,
gonna,
like,
lie, that's pretty cool.
But to me, that's great writing, because that's like that might not be something you want to share. You know,
honest and unmerciful.
Yeah, which is super cool. You know, this is where I'm gonna chalk this up to his youth. This is where the one part where I'm like a little on the film, and we said it a little before, it's just his, like, obsession with Penny.
Well, it does get to that point when Penny overdoses on the Quaaludes.
Yeah, so...
He's, like, and it's really, it's, like, during, I think, a cover of, I forget what song it is, Sunday by, who's the lead singer of Velvet Underground? Why am I blanking right now?
Lou Reed. Oh, yeah.
And it's during the graduation, and there's, like, a band singing it there, but he's just, like, going around with Penny while her feet are, like, dangling on the floor, and he's like, oh, I'm just going to go in for me, like, kisses her. I mean, by all means, at this point, he did call security in the hotel and said, like, my wife overdosed. says her name is Emily. That's a big thing. He's always constantly, and that's a huge payoff in the movie for William as a character, but he never knew. She never tells anyone her real name, Penny Lane, that is.
No. But, again, like you said, big payoff there on that. But this element there is a little creepy. Again, I want to chalk it up to youth because, maybe I felt like this one day when I was that age, you know. Just because, like, she's his friend doesn't mean they have to, like, date, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and, that's just, like,
but
you know, young,
like,
yeah.
Like youth, said,
yeah.
I'm chalking it up to. It was a little uncomfortable. You mentioned that one of the key scenes on this tour is they're in New York, and they're trying to get rid of Penny Lane, the band, because, what's his name, Russell's girlfriend is coming into town.
Yeah.
So Russell has a girlfriend the whole time. They're pretty serious.
I mean, and then that's the whole thing, like, and then he ends up being, William's too honest with her. That's his biggest, like, and he tells her that she was, bargained off for, like, a case of Heineken.
Yeah, she was traded off for a case of Heineken.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that and to go with, yeah, to another band or whatever, and that, you know.
She shows up, though, in New York, and obviously she doesn't get the response. Russell kind of ignores her, mm-hmm. and she ends up ODing on Quaaludes in, the Waldorf or something, right? It's, like, a beautiful hotel room.
Yeah, she's, like, a bunch of, like, food.
And it's a powerful scene. It really is. I'm not, like, knocking the scene. Just, again, a little bit weird that, like, he kisses her while she's, like, passed out.
And he gives the good news right before, and then they're going to be on the cover of the Rolling Stone. Yeah. Was all start singing. I don't know. It's again, like we talked about, not with, I think, this amount of passion, which again shows that film is my wife and music is my mistress, but with State and Main, you know, like the behind the scenes kind of vibe, like the industry.
Yeah.
And just, it's just so cool seeing like people bond. And you just, I think everyone wants that. I think the biggest thing that everyone searches for in life, not trying to get too deep or anything, but like, is acceptance.
Deep words from Kyle.
But it's like acceptance. That was just, you know, one of the biggest things like in my life, you know, that's like finally getting to high school and, you know, where we grew up, it was four different towns, and look at all of my closest friends are still from high school from another town that I didn't go, like, you know, from a young age with, because I finally met people that like I had things in common with.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that, especially when you're younger. I think it might change when you're older.
Yeah. Also, the one other thing that doesn't help the creepiness of that scene, the juxtaposition with Stevie Wonder, one of my favorite, My Cher Moore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So weird.
But, yeah, she just kind of says she's going to go home after that. And after that, we get the famous plane scene where there's really bad turbulence, and Russell tells everyone that I love the turbulence starts happening, he starts going, Peggy Sue.
Yeah, what a great callback.
Buddy Holly song. And then he even goes, like, hello, baby, like, for the big bopper.
And then that's a scary plane scene.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching that as a kid and being like, it, like, reminded me of Twister all over again of the show.
The door thing?
Yeah, the door
thing. Well, I was going to say, that's the scariest part, right, when the door opens? Mm-hmm. Like, and you see the pilots panicking.
Oh, yeah. He's like, thank God, we're going to make it after all.
But,
yeah,
it's like confession time.
Yeah, Russell tells everyone he loves them, but then, Dennis, the new manager,
which is Jimmy Fallon.
He says,
God,
we did
a hit and run,
and he, like, didn't look back, and but he sees the guy's face. It's, like, really creepy. And then, Jeff says he slept with Leslie, that's, Russell's girlfriend. They were broken up at the time or whatever, and then everyone like goes silent, and then the drummer, and then they start having that riff of saying like, no, you're like, everyone doesn't like you, Russell, and blah 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 blah, and then the drummer just yells out like, I'm gay.
Yeah, which he delivers well. A little cheap of a line, you know, like for that to be the punchline of something. Oh, gay, funny, haha. But
it's more, I see what you're saying, like, when you watch it now, but at least, but for that time, like, that's just, like, it's still, you know, like, as far as coming out, like, think about how many famous, from my favorite of Queen, like, it's not like Freddie, like, came out.
True.
And then Elton
John.
You're
right about that. You're right about that.
I think, you know, he's just, like, on, you know, knocking on heaven's door. Pun intended. And is that a pun, or is it just a reference? Fun reference.
That's a reference, that's not a pun.
Okay. Well. But, and then the whole Rolling Stone stuff happens. They're saying it's a, you know, a puff piece and nothing's real. And he calls in to Philip Seymour Hoffman for some, you know, like, for some solace. So we'll play the last and very, very infamous and just honest and unmerciful of this scene.
See, friendship is the booze they feed you. They want you to get drunk and feeling like you belong.
Well, it was fun.
Because they make you feel cool. And hey, I met you. You are not cool.
I know. Even when I thought I was, I knew I wasn't.
Right, because we are uncool. Now, while women will always be a problem for guys like us, most of the great art in the world is about that very problem. Good-looking people, they got no spine. Their art never lasts. Then they get the girls, but we're smarter.
Yeah, I can really see that now.
Yeah, because great art is about, you know, guilt and longing and, you know, love disguises sex and sex disguises love. Hey, let's face it. You got a big head start.
I'm glad you were home.
I'm always home. I'm uncool.
Me too.
You're doing great. Yeah. The only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you share with someone else when you're uncool.
Is it my advice to you? And I know you think these guys are your friends.
If you want to be a true friend to them, be honest and unmerciful.
So we get that repeat of the honest and unmerciful thing, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's just... Like you said, like an overlying theme, or just the words of guidance for William. And so it's after this that, because at first they were calling it a puff piece because of his, like, sloppy note-taking. But, yeah, I mean, then he just is honest and unmerciful, and the band denies it all. So it kind of backfires at first.
Yeah. I mean, his first thing is shitty, his first submission, yeah. Right? His second one, like you said, sloppy. He does a good version. And they say no.
Yeah. But, I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman in this scene, just, again, we said the lines earlier of, like, the only true currency in this world, and just the way his, like, voice breaks when he's reading the line.
Of course I'm cool.
Yeah. I love the shot is just him sitting, the opening shot is just a wide shot, him sitting on his floor, surrounded by what he loves, all the albums, and then we just get this a tight, intimate shot, like profile shot of his face, and there's nothing, not many scenes, like, speak to me on a level that, like, this scene does.
It's... We always sound like we're waxing poetic about this guy, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, like, trying to butter his bread, but, I mean...
It's... He's just so...
Women are, you know, are always a problem for guys like us. I mean, I guess I have no spine, because I am a very good-looking guy.
No, but it's... It's almost fake what he's saying, because it's almost like he knows everything that's going on. But he knows everything that has just gone on. Friendship is the booze they feed you.
Yeah.
You know, these lines are just so perfect and so...
They're so perfect, and they're so perfect because they fit so... they speak volumes, I think, to many people, like, outside of the movie, but they're speaking to William, and they really resonate with him. Like, you know, it's not like there's a, like, an argument, like, a low point between Lester and William. And then he's just saying also, he's preaching what we're seeing, again, being that, like, chorus in a way, and it's just nah. I mean, the last scene we have with Lester, with Philip Seymour Hoffman, but
it's a small role, one of his greatest roles. It's nothing that's ever going to get noticed for an award, but mm-hmm. It really is one of his greatest roles.
I mean, after this, I mean, it comes down to that final scene, right? Like, that's the most important part, where Penny kind of tricks Russell into thinking
that
he's
it's not the final scene, right? But it's like...
No, but I'm saying, like, that's the...
I love that scene.
Yeah. And so Russell is tricked by Penny into thinking that he's showing up and they're going to hash out their relationship. I love what he says to her.
Oh, I wanted to mention something first before we get to that.
Sure.
This whole, how it all unfolds in this, like, quick span, I really like, because remember, he runs into his sister, Zooey Deschanel's character, mm-hmm. in a random airport.
Yeah.
Oh, but before that, sorry. Before that, even Russell.
Boy, I jumped ahead too much.
Write what you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember when he's? I love how he just turns around and says, "Write what you want." Yeah. You know, he runs to his sister. His sister's ears, and she's a flight attendant now. She's like, "Let's go somewhere. Where do you want to go? I'll take off."
Cut to home.
Yeah, and
the mom answering.
She is not happy about it. Like,
Zooey Deschanel. Yeah. Mom is very happy.
Like, all places you're gonna go.
I love just like. You know, like, would she say, "I accept your apology," or like, I forgive you. And so Deschanel's just like, "I didn't apologize for anything."
Oh, God, I love that.
Just the awkward laughs between them.
So he's home and he passes out.
Yeah. I think it's like a couple, it's not like right away.
No, he's wearing the same things. This is what I noticed when Russell comes over.
Wow, okay.
He's just like passed out, but she's not the sister.
Yeah. Well, so change out of her uniform.
Either it's the same day later, which is a little crazy. But you ever so tired, especially when you're a kid, and like you pass out in your clothes and you don't wake up to the next day like that.
Yeah,
I think that's what happened here. I think
also, as an adult, alcohol is very bad.
I think that's what happens here, though.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying.
You know, and so it's the next day, and you were alluding to this scene, so.
Yeah.
So, I just wanted to set it up.
And she tricks Russell. He thinks, I love what he says to her, let's say all the things we never said to one another. Mm-hmm. And so you think that's, and she's like, do you have a pen? You know, and you think that he's going to head over there. But he arrives, and I love the awkward confusion of this scene.
Yeah, because he thinks it's Penny's home.
Penny's house, and Elaine, William's mom, answers the door, and she knows, you know, who it is, and she's like, oh, I felt a connection between us. And then he asks if she's home, meeting Penny, and she's like, who? Anita? And she just, Zoe Deschanel just gives this great, like, what? Oh, me?
Do you think she knew who he was?
Yeah.
She's, like, into music. Okay, I was going to ask you that.
I mean, she's definitely into music, because we learned that in the beginning of the film, but I think she, yeah, I think so. And just the fact that she, I'm sure, like...
She just took a flight home. He probably told her a little bit about it. She's like, oh, Russell Hammond, I know.
Yeah.
You know? So, that's just great. And he walks into the bedroom, right?
Yeah.
Because he sees the photos, then he realizes it's Williams. And they have that nice conversation.
Where the enemy sleeps. That's also a fun, like, you know, I'm speaking to the only person, I'm telling the truth to the one person I shouldn't be.
And I think, is it Greg Allman that you mentioned earlier that came across? I think this actually happened with him, too. Greg Allman, not with the whole switcheroo, but I saw.
Visited Cameron Crowe.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
I'd like to apologize to him about something. I'm not sure. I'm sure it wasn't 100% like this, but it was just to say, like, "Hey, man, sorry, what happened there?" Because I know, like, Greg Allman really lost his temper with a young Cameron Crowe. Okay. So that's where that scene's taken from.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, he's. You know, he has a great line that says, we both wanted to be with her, but I think she wanted us to be together. And he tells William to go ahead and call her. They live in the same city. And then William finally gets his interview. And, oh, and the one other, like we said, the payoff, that her name was, what again? I wrote it down at
something
one point.
Really weird. I wrote it down, too.
Yeah, it's Lady Goodman.
Lady Goodman, yes.
Her mom wanted her to marry up. That was her advice. And so she named her Penny Lady.
Lady Goodman.
So I'm blame her going for by Penny Lane. But, yeah, so, and then there's that little satisfaction because he, you know, says to William, I never knew her real name. And William just has that, you know, that's, at that point, that's like, you know, his, like, little win. Even besides, like, that the article is going to come out or whatever. But Russell gives him, you know, finally that interview and says, you know, and William wants to go with, what do you love about music? And that's the, and then that's the great. It's just, Russell starts talking and we see the No More Planes tour the bus. We see like the band getting along and there he's like, him and Jeff are like in one another's, you know, embrace. And obviously there's fights to come and they're going to eventually, except for what, the Rolling Stones, no bands like stay together for ever.
Isn't that alluded to in the film
at
one point?
Yeah, Jimmy Fallon's character says, you think you're going to see Mick Jagger up on stage, James, at 50 years old? Cut to Mick Jagger being like 75.
That's crazy.
And then Penny gets her payoff.
Like, that's funny in 2000. It's 2017.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, Mick Jagger at that point was well over 50, but close to being 60 at that point. And then Penny gets her payoff by going to Morocco.
Yeah, which is something she said she was going to do.
And we see, what is it again? What's the bus's name?
Doris.
Doris. We see Doris like a true Western riding off into the sunset. And that's almost famous.
So, again, pretty awesome film. Is this your favorite, like, rock film or, like, music film? I know you're a big fan of.
I do enjoy a good musical.
Good musical. But
Is it my favorite? It might be.
What's up there for you? What are some other rock films you like?
You're putting me on the spot.
Just asking. I mean, just something came to the top of my head. I know you like Rockstar.
Yeah, but that's I will defend Rockstar, but that's obviously nowhere near the level of Almost Famous. Oh boy, I honestly like my mind is
honestly
just,
there's not too many rock films.
Yeah. I don't.
I'll give you a couple seconds to look it up.
Okay. Entertain the good people.
Until then. Shtick. So Chicago, huh? Deep dish pizza. What's that about? It was a bad question on my part because I didn't have an answer myself.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, please. Yeah, let's, while I'm filling in.
This is my favorite rock film.
Spinal Tap?
Spinal... Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
Rock and Roll High School. Hard Day's Night.
How about
The Doors?
School of Rock?
School. I was going to say School of Rock, yeah. Wayne's World? Is that...
I don't really count that.
No, I know.
Oh, That Thing You Do.
Oh,
you
Detroit like Rock movie? City is awesome.
Detroit Rock City. That Thing You Do.
That Thing You Do like, is, yeah, that's a great
so this,
movie.
So there's a list... High Fidelity might count. It's not really... Well, they do produce some music, so...
Yeah.
Rockstar's up there, I see on your list. Oh, God, there's a lot more than I thought, actually.
Well, I mean, they're going into, like, also, like...
Yeah, documentaries don't count, but... Yeah. Josie and the Pussycats?
Josie and the Pussycats.
I think we've talked about that on the episode before.
Yeah. Purple Rain?
Oh, my God, how could I fucking forget Purple Rain? Yeah. Sorry about the F word, I just got very excited. How could I forget Purple Rain? Wow.
Shame. Brian Rodriguez, you're on notice.
I am on notice. I love Purple Rain.
I love it too. It's just that's good. I fall into it when I'm put on the spot. I'm not a good on the spot guy with trivia.
Purple Rain.
Classic. But,
classic film.
I mean,
why do you think this resonates so much with Hoffman fans or non fans alike? Why do you think this resonates?
Because again,
so much?
Like, I mean, people, well, it's a big thing now in like our culture, like to be like to like almost accept, like labels aren't good by any means, but you know, it's like cool to be like, I'm a nerd, you know what I'm saying? Like that happened after this movie came out. You know, people really embrace it, like with the tech boom and everything, I feel like.
Yeah.
But,
and like I said, it's a little bit of like hipster culture too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's just, so I think before like that happened, like it's okay. I mean, even then, like the drummer admitting that he's gay, like that's just still was, that like back in 2000, that was, you know, people weren't as comfortable like coming out,
and it's the, again, it's, it was still part of the humor back then too.
Yeah. So to answer your question, he just, the way he delivers those lines, so I mean, obviously, you know, it's not like Cameron Crowe wrote them, but the way he delivers them and just is just so honest with William, and and they have this bond, and just that love of music, and knowing yourself for good and bad, that's like what this character is, and that's what I think really resonates with people the most. What about you? I mean, what's...
It's that. It's the whole, like, of course I'm home, I'm uncool. We all have the moments where we just feel so uncool.
Yeah, we have those Friday nights where it's just like, you know, I try to enjoy life, but...
You have them less than anybody.
I'm sorry?
You have these moments less than anybody.
No, I have a lot of these moments. You know that. Come on. I've taken the last... I'm about to go on another trip, a two-week trip, but last trip I did, I called you. I'm like, man, it's just like, this one's... It's fun. Thailand was amazing, but I was just like, I felt lonely at one point. I felt like not...
This
uncool.
Is the infamous phone call that you've referred to on many, or at least one other podcast you did. No. And that's what I mean. We all have the moments.
I'm burying myself right now.
We all have the moments where we just feel super uncool. And this kind of just validates that.
Yeah, validates, justify, like, or just, no, even, you know what it is? It just says, like, fuck you. It really, like, it, screw anyone that tries to make you feel crappy. Be yourself. Find something you love and don't let go.
And it doesn't feel that corny.
Stay uncool.
You know, it doesn't feel that corny when it ends.
No, it's so sincere. It's so palpable the way he
played this role and made it sound corny.
Yeah,
you know, maybe, like maybe, almost more like a fairy godmother.
Yeah, maybe Jack Black.
You're a Jack Black guy.
I love Jack Black, but I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman brings. I mean, this role, it's his. It'll obviously always be his, and it's going to be something that continues to really, to, you know, to touch people and to, you know.
How great is it for him playing this, when he was playing this, like, to just... We're talking about Lester Bangs now. Someone who might have been lost in history, unless you're a music historian.
Yeah.
Because of his performance here.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm definitely going to post some, you know, like an interview with Lester Bangs, just so, and just then from there, go onto YouTube, read articles. Like, this guy was an awesome figure in the music scene, and brilliant... Brilliant guy, and I Philip Seymour Hoffman definitely did him justice. And
oh, I agree.
Yeah,
for sure. So, anything else you wanted to touch on with Almost Famous? I mean, this is sometimes we can go on for hours, but
yeah,
but this one feels like
This is cathartic in a way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. It's we're not stretching here to talk about things. It's just because this movie means, it's, at least to me, I don't want to put words in your mouth. No. It means so much to me, this movie.
Mm-hmm. No, out of all of his movies, this one, it means them. I love so many of his performances, and then like I am in love with, you know, like some of his movies. You know, all of his P.T. Anderson ones, I love all those films. But, and again, his performances, like, pretty much every performance of his I love. But this is the one, this is the movie that means the most to me, too.
Wow, that's a big statement there.
Yeah.
I can't disagree. I'm going to wait till we see them all.
Yeah.
And then we'll go and we'll discuss this for sure. But this is one, again, this is one I was waiting to see. It's sometimes it's a labor to see some of these films, and not because they're bad and not because he does bad, but it's like, this is supposed to be entertainment. I'm not about like being here and making this like a film school podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just about fun. And while this movie,
what it means to us, what it means to you,
like it resonates, but it's also a fun movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's a nice, it's like a perfect length. Great soundtrack, obviously, which always helps.
Well, let us know what you guys think of it. I'm sure you, everyone here has strong opinions on Almost Famous. Let's find the 8% who don't like this film.
Yeah.
I'd love for them to comment. And
come out.
It's just,
we'll
just
turn you.
Just let us know. Yeah, we'll prove it to you that this is just an awesome movie.
Yeah, so if you're watching this on Facebook, thank you so much for dealing with us. And
putting up with our faces and the lag.
Lag, technical difficulties.
Who knows if we're even on right now? We're going to check after.
Never turned on a light in the room, so it's gotten darker. I mean, it's getting darker outside, but, you know, I'm reading.
As it generally does later in the day.
Oh, wow. Except not, like, yeah, in the northern
the Arctic, yeah, Arctic Circle in the summer.
Which, that's where we're coming to you from for our next movie.
The P.S. I Love Hoffman World Tour.
Oh, okay. Exactly. no more. I got nothing.
Sometimes you got nothing, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
So, what do we have next week, Kyle?
Next week we have a documentary called "The Party's Over," which Philip Seymour Hoffman is the narrator, the host of this documentary. He didn't direct it, but it's about the 2000 election between Bush and Gore. Politics, always very delightful.
Yeah,
to talk
yeah.
About.
I can't wait to talk about that one for sure.
And we have Dan Pichel. He works in the film industry and also has had a small career in politics. So we're trying to get his insight into the world of politics.
For sure. And he brings a different perspective, we'll put
different
it that
perspective
way.
Different perspective than, yeah.
Than a lot of people. Lot of people. And yeah, I mean, super excited to do this. Thanks again for tuning in. Like, listen, follow, share, subscribe.
Yeah, and always make sure to go on to cageclub.me for the Cage Club Network.
Yeah, Brian, cageclub.me. This is the shirt made by the gorgeous and talented Joey Lewandowski.
The gorgeous and talented Joey Lewandowski.
Co-founder of Cage Club Podcast Network.
Yeah, with Michael Manzi.
With Michael Manzi.
My dear friend. And, yeah, so make sure to do that. They got plenty other... Ours is the best. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But, you know.
Middle of the road.
Middle of the road. Yeah, exactly. Like Stillwater.
Monkey business.
Middle of the road.
Monkey business,
yeah,
number one.
Yeah, totally. But, no, plenty of awesome.
No, great shows.
Yeah, great podcasts. And
they just announced the new one, the Affleck one.
The podcast.
The podcast.
Pocket Con, Harvard Yacht, Beantown, not Chicago. Learned it.
No.
And, yeah.
Yeah, definitely check that out when it comes out this fall. But just go back and listen to all the Cage ones. Listen to all the
Keanu
ones. Yeah. Listen to the Zac Efron ones, I guess. Whatever.
But
No, they're great. They're great.
But most importantly, let's say it together, Brian.
Stay in school. Oh, sorry.
Stay uncool by staying in school.
Yes, stay.
I'm looking at us on the screen, not at the camera. It's really rude to point.
Stay uncool.
Sex a thing, you. I believe in. and miracles.